Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Face Connecticut. I'm Aaron Kupek on WTIC News Talk 1080, WTIC-FM, and WTIC.com. We are pleased to be joined this morning by Brian Flaherty, Senior Vice President for Public Policy with the Connecticut Business and Industry Association, also former member of the State House of Representatives. Good morning to you, sir.
Aaron, good to be with you.
Well, let's get right down to business, no pun intended. As we sit here this morning, there is no state budget in place for Connecticut. Mm-hmm. How does the lack of a state budget affect Connecticut businesses and those perhaps looking to do business here?
Confidence and lack of confidence is, I think, the biggest cost of not having a budget. So tomorrow morning will be the 24th day that Connecticut gets up, goes to work, and just like we do every day, our workforce and the companies that they work for. Yet the state legislature will hit very close to a full month overtime without doing a budget. And what happens is companies that are here are looking for a reason to sustain and grow. There are also companies looking at Connecticut as an enviable place to do business, and we can talk about later on. We've got a world-class workforce and an education system. And what companies are looking for from the state capital is some stability. Now, I keep putting this in terms of teaching our teenagers how to drive. When you sit into a car, how do you make sure that you have a steady hand on the wheel? You look at the horizon. Where do you want to go? You don't look at the front of the car and oversteer. And what happens when the state legislature, because of a one-year budget or a two-year budget, they're supposed to be two-year budgets, but they change a lot, the steering is erratic because then there's no real long-term vision about where the state needs to go. And so what happens is that lack of stability, and the Governor Malloy began the legislative session calling for stability, and we absolutely agree with him. Stability at the Capitol gets confidence from the companies here and those looking to come here that the state knows where it's going, that the rules won't be changed midstream to raise more money or hike a tax or hike a fee, and that there is a steadiness on the throttle and on the tiller. And that's what Connecticut needs, so that stability equals confidence and equals growth. And so we're sitting here in late July, Aaron, at a point where we have net growth in jobs in Connecticut. That's good news. And we want it to accelerate. We want it to be sustained. And so when there's no budget, when there is no policy for how Connecticut will raise revenue, how Connecticut will deliver services, core services. And by the way, the biggest group that's hurting right now are the nonprofit businesses and service providers that are community-based, that help in provide services to people of all ages and families. No blueprint budget means no confidence, and despite that, and despite our growth, we need a budget in place with a long-term vision that structurally reforms how the state does business so that we can accelerate the growth in jobs.
You were in the legislature in 1991 during the income tax mm-hmm. battle. Are there any parallels between that and the predicament state government is currently in?
There are some, and it's always easy in hindsight to believe that, well, sitting here from 2017, boy, they just suit us up and put us back in the game for old timers day and we can get things done. It was very frustrating. I'll tell you what's a little bit troubling, though, is that in 1991, we had a very high sales tax, and the debate was an iconic struggle over does Connecticut for the first time ever enact an income tax. And that was a major crystallized yes or no on the income tax will get us a state budget. I was among those that opposed it. CBIA actually was one of those that came out in favor of it because of that stability, because of not having a patchwork of sales tax sales taxes and other types of nuisance taxes because we needed predictability for revenue. And the income tax that was adopted was very broad-based, was very stable. And over the years now with this income tax, it has become more progressive. It relies more on the high earners. And unfortunately, what did not happen, one parallel that's or let's say it's an echo, is we're debating, we're talking about the state spending cap. In 1991, the legislature enacted the income tax and then also put on our ballot a constitutional cap on spending. So Connecticut's citizens would know that state spending would be in line with their personal income growth and the growth of the economy. And that went on the ballot. 90% of the voters approved it in the statewide election in 1992. And that spending cap has been ignored. It has been gone around. There are a million reasons we could spend all day just on that. So here we are in 2017, looking back at an income tax that despite other tax increases, there was a huge tax increase in 2011, another one in 2015. They haven't produced stability or the revenues the state needs to grow. We still, as a state, have not fully addressed the spending issue and the issues in the state spending cap. And I think that's one of the main reasons why you not only have people looking to fix numbers in a two-year budget, but looking at what are the long-term structural reforms that we need to make. We have an income tax. There's a proposal to bring the sales tax back up to 7%. So we should be in better shape right now. We can be in better shape right now as a state. This is the birthplace of Yankee ingenuity, Aaron. This is a can-do state, and there's an economy showing signs of growth that is just needs some folks at the Capitol, meaning the legislature, to get their job done.
Last week, state employee unions announced that workers had overwhelmingly ratified a concessions agreement seeking to save north of $1.5 billion over the next 2 years. Does CBIA feel that is a good step, or should the state have held out for more?
Well, there's pluses and minuses to that agreement. First of all, on the positive side, you have for the first time Connecticut following the example of the state of Rhode Island and a couple of others that are converting from an old defined, a pension to a 401k, if I boil it right down, to a defined contribution rather than a defined benefit program. That will help save money over time, although that's just for new hires. There are some areas where the state employees are giving back. They're taking pay freezes. But there are some other pieces of that agreement that are not, I guess, that we'll have to see if they fully pay off on the savings down the line. The CBAC agreement, essentially, all the state employee unions got together on non-wage issues, on the pensions, the benefits. And they had an agreement that was supposed to expire originally this year, 2017. In 2011, the snooze bar was hit. There were some concessions. They said, we'll leave this agreement now in place till 2022. And the downside of what this agreement does now that the state employees and the governor just agreed to, they're going to kick it out 5 more years. So I think the jury is out and will be out as to whether or not this concession package will structurally change and bend the trend of the state that has underfunded its pension obligations, of some benefits which are still very strong, and that's great. The men and women that work for our state, that plow the roads, that take care of our prisons, that protect our public safety, they work extremely, extremely hard. They're good public servants. But even those benefits, I think, are far out of line with what the competitive sector, the private sector, the people that are listening this morning and then will be going to work on Monday with what they make. So the test for CBIA is, will this be and produce sustainable savings over time and bring the Connecticut state employee benefits more in line with those of state employees in our area states and also with some of the private sector and the competitive workforce?
Putting the state budget aside for a minute, What were the wins, the losses, and the jobs left undone this year?
Aaron, you know, we had some underreported successes, and I don't mean we in just terms of CBIA, but there was legislation passed on a broad bipartisan basis to streamline the workers' compensation system and the claim system under workers' comp. That is, workers' compensation is a major cost for Connecticut's employers, and workers' compensation benefits are needed by the people who get hurt on the job. And so that system is being streamlined with some legislation that we supported and helped pass. Our Connecticut technical high schools, we used to call them the VOTEC, the vocational technical schools, that system is now going to be split apart from our Department of Education. Department of Education is very important in our state, but in some ways, it's a pass-through entity for state grants to go to cities and towns, to our school districts. Our technical high schools are the magnet schools, the original magnet schools in our state. Our technical high schools are where the machinists are going to come from and the careers are being built. And those technical high schools are the prime pipeline for talent and job development in the state. And they are now going to be split apart so that they can develop their strategies and their budgets and not necessarily have to wash them through the full Department of Education. They're still part of it. But those high schools and career development, there were a few bills that not only split them out, and by the way, this was a priority of Speaker of the House Joe Arcimowitz, a Democrat, and House Minority Leader Themis Claridis, a Republican. We're going to be spending more time looking at the high-growth job areas. So beyond just splitting them out on their own, there was legislation passed to focus on manufacturing and other areas where we need to deliver the jobs for the future, particularly for our defense contractors. We got a backlog of job backlog at Pratt & Whitney on jet engines, submarines, and electric boat, and helicopters down at Sikorsky and Lockheed Martin in Stratford. So the focus on job and career development, and also allowing and changing the rules so that men and women currently working in today's workforce can teach. So we basically, by being flexible on some of the teaching requirements in the tech high schools and in the community colleges, are going to allow more people in those doors. And beyond that, there was some focus on our biotechnology. We have a biotech sector we're trying to grow here, from the Jackson Laboratory to companies like Achillion and Alexion down in Haven in that area, and some other important pieces of legislation that are important to the companies here and the men and women that work for them. So they were non-budget related, some really good, solid steps forward. And the best news is they were not Republican ideas. They were not Democratic ideas. They were all about focusing on jobs.
On the other side of the coin, were there some proposals that didn't make it over the finish line that CBIA wishes had?
Unemployment compensation reform. Very briefly, the Connecticut companies pay into unemployment compensation fund. And when the economy hit the skids in 2008 and we had very, very high unemployment, Connecticut had to get a loan from the federal government to help make sure we paid our benefits. The fund went empty. It is now building back up. We had some legislation that we were working with Jason Rojas, who's the Democratic chairman of the Finance Committee from East Hartford, and his Republican counterparts in the House and Senate to stabilize that fund. It was a great opportunity. I think that bill will be back because that will help with more stability. That fund, we don't have to worry about that taking any more loans from the federal government and giving surcharges. So that was one thing. And then I'll only say back on the budget and the missed opportunities of not having a budget, CBIA is the state's largest, essentially, Chamber of Commerce and Manufacturing group rolled into one. When we talk to our counterpart associations in other states that have fixed their budget problems, they're tackling infrastructure. They're tackling and doing more about job and career development. They're working on moving beyond this Groundhog Day budget problem and breaking that bad cycle into tackling some of the other challenges and building their states. That's probably the biggest cost of the unfinished business of the session, are those other areas in infrastructure, transportation. Clearly, in our state, we've got a long way to go.
You're listening to Face Connecticut. We are talking to Brian Flaherty. He is the Senior Vice President for Public Policy with the Connecticut Business and Industry Association, CBIA. CNBC recently announced their annual ranking of states and how friendly they are to business and economic growth. And Connecticut moved up 10 spots from 43 to 33.
We moved up to 33. If you look at 33 versus 100 or 50 states, it's still on the lower end. But the good news is we're tied for the largest growth in 1 year. So we got the most improved player award that we tied with two other states. But Aaron, if you look at the factors, they do look at infrastructure. And by the way, our transportation infrastructure, I think we're number 46. We're not doing very well. But where Connecticut jumped forward is on the productivity of our workforce and quality of our workforce. That's number one. And the second, our education system. If you are building for sustainable growth, those are two fantastic pillars to build upon. So this was very good news for our state. And in some ways, we put us ahead of some of our neighboring states. I mean, there are so many different rankings that come out every other week. But when you see this type of growth, when you see this recognition about our high-quality workforce and our education system that's world-class, that is very, very good news. And that's just another reason and a reminder and a very timely reminder to the General Assembly, fix the budget, build a sustainable budget, change the way our state does business, improve and reform, lean some of the state government operations, take some lessons, work with our nonprofit community providers, and then we can be not just worthy of that improvement, but we can build and keep on going from there. We want to keep moving up in those rankings. There is no reason why Connecticut can't continue to improve.
Do you think lists like this are overhyped, or does the business community really take note when this comes out every year?
I think the business community takes note. The political community takes note. And everyone wants to be number one. And there is a risk in just focusing too much on these lists and how am I doing versus Ohio or Mississippi or other areas. And the risk is that we fail or lose sight of our strengths and how to build on our strengths. Connecticut is a can-do state. As I said, it's the birthplace of Yankee ingenuity. This is a terrific state. If we take from those rankings some ideas and build an agenda for long-term growth, then they will be fine. If all we do is cling to the ones we like and point out the ones that we don't like, whether it's CBIA or any other group or politician, we're missing opportunities. So they're helpful, but they should not become a distraction. They may provide some milestones that we could show, hey, this is how we're improving. But what we need to focus on, and we're about to head into a gubernatorial election in another year from now, is what is the agenda for Connecticut? What is the agenda to build Connecticut jobs? What is the agenda? What are the things we need to do to move forward, to look at that horizon that I was talking about before so we don't oversteer as Republicans and Democrats with very narrow margins in the House and Senate, which means these parties have to work together. We're looking forward at CBIA to restoring that long-term focus. And so ranking is nice. We tweeted about it. We beat the drum. We feel great. But let's keep our eye on the ball.
We don't rank well in infrastructure, as you noted. Mm-hmm. And one of the proposals that a lot of Democratic lawmakers, especially at the Capitol, say would help would be to bring back tolls on Connecticut highways. Does CBIA weigh in on that?
CBIA, absolutely. We have thousands of members from the two and three employees all the way up to the largest companies that are in our state. And each one of those companies needs to move people and product. They need their employees to be able to get to work, or they need to do their sales calls, and they need to move their product and make sure that that can be done. One important step the legislature took this year was before deciding should Connecticut have tolls and what should they be and how should we do it, they paused for a moment and said, look, over time, our current transportation infrastructure is funded by gasoline tax and other different types of revenue sources. From time to time, this special transportation fund, which is separate from our state's general fund budget, has been raided, and money taking out of that to help fill the gaps and sweep surpluses out of the transportation fund to go into the general fund. And so we created, the legislature passed what's called as the lockbox, the idea being if a penny is raised on the premise that it's going to go to our infrastructure, roads, rails, bridges, that it needs to go into that lockbox and only be spent for that purpose. So when the voters go to the polls this in 2018, not only will they have the names of the men and women running for governor and General Assembly and the other offices, there will be a question. And it is a proposed amendment to our state constitution to create a lockbox by state constitution, which means you can't change it by passing a law the following year, that transportation dollars are used for transportation purposes. That's supposed to be the sign that whatever and however the money is raised, it'll go to the right place. Then the question becomes, and our board will be tackling this, and I think it will be a part of a long-term conversation. Commissioner Redeker has come and talked to our board about the long-term infrastructure improvements, and do tolls fit into that framework? You can hear some people who say, well, everybody else has one. We should get them too. And there are two reasons why you would raise tolls or put tolls on the highway. One is for to raise revenue, and another is mitigating congestion and finding ways to try and free up the roads by tolling during certain peak hours of the day. Right now, this General Assembly has not they've got the lockbox going. We are going to be engaging very closely with our membership, but also with the governor, with the administration and legislative leaders as they go forward to consider, if there's tolling, what exactly do they have in mind? Because we need to know the business impact. We need to know the impact on the people who live in this state before money is raised, before. So we're not rushing into it. We will have, but we intend to be very informed and to help inform our members as that debate goes forward, which probably starts next year. But the lockbox has to happen first. So we're encouraged that that will be in place.
Now, if voters give the okay to the lockbox, is there a concern that lawmakers and others might find a way around that the way they found the way around the constitutional spending cap?
That is the this is what requires vigilance. This is what, Aaron, requires voters, CBIA, our members, all members of the House and the Senate to make sure that doesn't happen. And one of the concerns in the debate over the lockbox is that is there a point at which the revenue is raised before it's put in the box that the few pennies and dollars and nickels are taken out first? So you can say whatever goes in that lockbox will stay there, but is all the money going in the box to begin with? So that's one thing to look out for. With the spending cap, and there was legislation that we supported, I testified on, that the legislature had to define the spending cap. The General Assembly's job was to say just what exactly would be in and out of the spending cap by law, to then buttress what was in the constitutional amendment. That never happened. And when our Attorney General George Jepson was asked, "Is the cap in force?" He ruled that no, it wasn't, because the legislature never did its job, which required, I believe, a two-thirds vote, so a supermajority. And so actually add that, the definition of the cap, to one of the things, missed opportunities in this session. But that's General Assembly, lawmakers, anything in public policy requires that watchful eye and that direct engagement, which is what we're here for.
He is Brian Flaherty, a senior vice president for public policy at CBIA. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Aaron. Enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to Face Connecticut. I'm Aaron Kupek. Enjoy the balance of your weekend.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.